Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Real ghost stories online.
When you sign up to be an EPP, extra podcast person to Real Ghost Stories Online, you'll have access to the best ghost stories we've ever told.
The oven doors started slamming open and closed. And in places like this, oven doors take up entire walls.
Never before had I seen such clear evidence of something non-human being in a room with me.
Because it felt like somebody was here. You know, you see, I did it written in paint where you just painted.
These are stories only EPP members have access to.
I don't know why, but I just wonder if that scream isn't a family member that was there to claim their loved one.
There was like something standing there right in the threshold of the doorway, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't breathe.
It's only $5 a month when you sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com by clicking Become an EPP.
There was an old lady standing at the foot of the bed, and she said she could see details and everything. You know, it just looked like an old lady standing at the foot of the bed.
You'll get access to the best ghost stories and exclusive video content we've ever created.
I have no doubt in my mind that it was completely supernatural.
But it felt like it was in my head. Like, it didn't feel like I was hearing it. It felt like it was in my head.
Become an EPP now and help keep our show on the air. At realghoststoriesonline.com, click Become an EPP.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, we have a great interview for you. Rebecca Patrick Howard, best-selling paranormal author, joining us. Talk about her new book, 2 weeks. This is quite a story. Quite a personal story for her. It's not just a matter of doing research. It occurred to some friends of hers very close growing up, and she was essentially one step away from the haunting. So very familiar with what happened with a family that was driven out of their home over the course of 2 weeks. With some very, very dark entities. We're going to get to that interview in just a few minutes here at Real Ghost Stories Online. First, I want to let you know, we have been talking about it, and we have put it up. There is now a Real Ghost Stories Online wiki. Yes, there's a Real Ghost Stories Online wiki. And we're beginning to edit that. Many of our listeners are working on it. It's not up on the website yet publicly, but it will be once we get some more entries into it. So if you want to be part of that, if you want to be someone who's contributing to it and editing or whatever you want to do, it's all volunteer. It's completely, if whatever you got time for, if you want to do it. But you can write about ghosts if you'd like. And essentially, it's kind of recapping the episodes. So when someone has a question, when someone thinks back going, what was in that episode or what was that? We now eventually will have a way to look back on that a little bit better than me going, Jenny, what do you think that was? I don't know. Do you know? I don't know. So there you go. It's under construction. So we have some very, very dedicated fans out there working on that. We greatly, greatly appreciate that dedication. an initiative to help put that together. So that's that. Without further ado, let's get into today's interview on Real Ghost Stories Online. Rebecca Patrick Howard is joining us, and if you want to check out all of her books and information, we'll have the link up on the website at Real Ghost Stories Online. Rebecca, as we get into this, it's the question I like to ask everyone who comes on this show. What was the initial thing that got you interested in the topic of the paranormal?
All right. I grew up in Eastern Kentucky. We lived pretty far back in the mountains. We didn't, of course, there wasn't internet when I was a kid, but we didn't have cable or a VCR. We had a community VCR we all used, everybody in my neighborhood. So, you know, sitting around and telling stories at night really was our form of entertainment. We'd all gather on the front porch if it was warm, or inside in the winter, and my grandmother would tell folk tales, ghost stories. Whether they were true or not, you know, she just liked to talk and we would listen. So I grew up, you know, with ghost stories and cryptology, and they were just a part of my everyday life.
It was just part of the world, part of what was out there. Sure. When you were a child and you were hearing these stories, and as you were growing, did you have any experiences yourself that made it go beyond just a story that grandma was telling?
I did, and, you know, people ask me, too, if I was afraid, and we always kind of treated ghosts or the paranormal in general as part of the family and part of the everyday world. You know, like if we heard a strange noise in, you know, the back of the house, we'd be like, oh, that's, you know, Aunt Ellen dropping in to say hello. So it was never like a scary thing for us. It was just sort of, you know, as natural as hearing the water faucet drip. But I didn't actually see anything or have what I would think of as a real paranormal experience until I was about 9 years old, and that was after my grandmother died. We moved into a house that was haunted. We literally only lived there for 4 months because it was not a good feeling. It wasn't a good haunting. And that's the first time I think I really put it in perspective, as in, wow, sometimes what they show on the movies, that kind of haunting is real, and I don't like that. That's not Aunt Ellen dropping in to say hello. You know, that's...
I
don't know these people.
I have to ask, because you kind of connected that to your grandmother dying about 4 months after. Was that just a time marker, or was that initially kind of who you thought might be there?
Yeah, that's initially who we thought it might be. There had been a few things. She died when I was 7, and there were a few things that happened after her death that I think were definitely her. Then that kind of stopped. We moved into this new house, and that activity didn't feel like her. You know, in the beginning, we thought, well, maybe she's come back around. You know, things have been quiet for about a year, and it had been sporadic experiences to begin with. Mm-hmm. So, well, maybe she's back. Maybe she went somewhere else for a while, and now she's back again. But it became very clear early on that it wasn't her. And I've never felt her again. In hindsight, I think that she might have stuck around for a little while to make sure everybody was okay. But I was really, really close to her. I lived with her when she died. But I don't think she's one of those spirits that stuck around and pops back in and visits from time to time. She went on to other things.
Sure. So there was some point there where you were experiencing the haunting activity where you determined that this isn't grandma anymore.
Yeah, this isn't grandma. I don't know these people at all.
Can you share what happened at all that made you realize that?
Yeah, well, my mom actually saw somebody in the house. We had just moved in, and she was upstairs. It was a very, very old house. It was built in the 1800s. There's rumors that it was used for the Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. But she was upstairs unpacking, and she got the feeling that somebody was watching her. So she turned around and looked over the rails, and there was an older woman standing on the staircase, and mom thought maybe a neighbor had wandered in. So she said hello, and the woman didn't say anything. And mom, can I help you? May I help you? Is there someone you're looking for? And the woman disappeared. So that was, you know, my mom's first experience with seeing anything.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a good feeling. I mean, I remember laying there at night in the bed and hearing, you know, footsteps coming towards the bed and a whispering, and it felt very hostile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't a warm, cozy, there's an angel type of feeling watching over me. This was, I'm in somebody else's house and they don't want me here.
Yeah. That's interesting to hear just kind of how that switches over from what may be good to something not so good, and then you're the one that has to be the one to decipher when that switch is happening.
Not long after moving in, we woke up and for several nights in a row, to the extent where we changed bedrooms. I was sleeping with my mom at the time because it was a new house and I was young. But we woke up the first few nights with our white sheets covered in tiny blood spots.
Oh, gosh.
And I mean, like, pinprick size blood. And at first we thought, you know, something was dripping from the ceiling. But, you know, there was nothing there. We kept changing sheets, but every night we would wake up and, like, the pinpricks would be bigger and bigger. And mom's like, let's sleep in another bedroom.
Yeah.
So...
I think that's mm-hmm. probably a good judgment call. Good parenting on the part of mom there. Let's start talking a little bit about the family in your new book, 2 Weeks.
Right.
How did you come to find out about this family and the experiences that you wrote about in the book?
Well, I was friends with them at the time of the haunting. So we were kids when it happened. Gosh, I have to think back. I was about 11 years old when it was the end of fifth grade, so that would make me about 11. And she was my best friend. The oldest daughter in the family was my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that we got involved is they had just moved in to this old house, and the move had been hard on them. So I asked if my friend could come spend a couple of nights with me. And they actually let her come for a week, and that was really exciting for us. It was summertime. Well, at the end of the week, we took her back home. Now, the change in the family from when we picked her up at the beginning of the week to when we brought her home at the end was visible. It was clear that something was going on in the house. They went from, you know, excited to be moving into such a nice place to when we brought her back, you know, to looking visibly shaken. You know, there's a real somber mood. The father was in physical pain. They were fighting with each other, screaming at each other. We hated leaving her there.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, we got a call from their family saying, come get her. Come get Laura. And we will call you when we want you to bring her back. And we thought that was weird. We had her for another week, and then they called and said, you can bring her back, but we've moved.
Oh, gosh.
We better tell you where we're living. We got the story about what had happened in bits and pieces over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of our secondhand involvement with it, is they actually sent, you know, their daughter to stay with us because of the paranormal activity until they could get her out.
So you were very up close and personal when all this was going on. It wasn't a case of, well, let's investigate this and talk with the family afterwards. It's been something that's been with you for quite some time.
Yeah, this has been with me for a while. We knew when we brought her home with us the second time, she told us what had happened to her, which was disturbing enough, and it was maybe the last straw. I mean, she was only there one night before we went back and got her. And she'd only spent 2 or 3 nights in the house before then. So she spent just a handful of nights there, period. But yeah, we knew at the time that there was something going on. We didn't know the extent of it until, you know, probably about a year later, we all sat down together and they told us exactly what had happened. We were in the middle of it, I guess, as much as we could be.
And I want to hear some of the details of what happened. But before we get to that, I want to ask, was this a family that had things happening before going into this house? Because, you know, some people have paranormal experiences. It's just like you were saying. It's kind of part of life. It's just what it is. Or was this the first occurrence where they can say they were visited by something unexplained?
This was the first occurrence.
Okay.
This was not a family that had a history of anything happening. And I don't know if this is a good time to throw this in here or not, but years and years later, I'm talking almost 20 years later, I was working a job in a totally different county about 3 hours away. And we were sitting around one day talking, you know, during a break about, you know, ghost stories. Mm-hmm. And one of my coworkers started talking about a house that she used to live in. And when she began describing the physical aspects of the house, I recognized it right away. And I asked her where it was, and she told me the name of the town. When I say town, I mean it's like a stretch of road.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same place. So she had lived there. Let's say, I actually have two examples of people, different families who lived there with the same experiences, who didn't know each other.
So the property itself has a bit of a history. So take us back to what you can recall and what you learned then, just through the discussions of them moving into the house. What sort of state was your family in? Day one. You know, when you get into a new home, everybody has boxes to unpack. There's some anticipation. There's eagerness. What were they like at that moment?
Right, they were really excited when they first moved in. This was a family who had a lot of experience in moving, can say. And they were a blue-collar family who, had just moved from a trailer. Mm-hmm. So there were five or six kids in the family. I have to stop and count to think about it, but it was a large family. So they had just moved from a two-bedroom trailer to a rambling farmhouse. So they were very excited to be there. It was, the house was not in bad shape, but it was an old house. Nothing had been updated. It was probably in the original state it had been in when it was built in the early 1900s. They were thrilled to be there. I mean, this to them was the nicest place they'd ever lived. They had bedrooms for everybody. Or they had a room for everybody. You know, everybody could spread out. There was a big yard. The kids could play without being anywhere near the street. So we were there on moving day, and there was just a lot of excitement. You know, the kids running up and down the staircase, showing everybody where their things went and how big the house was and how nice it was. And, you know, the parents are sitting out on the front porch, you know, drinking their Cokes and eating sandwiches and laughing and talking with the movers, and just felt really good to be there. So the initial move was a very positive experience, and we were happy for them to see them, you know, getting out of a very cramped, tight, you know, quarters into this. And we love old houses ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we were, you know, maybe even a little jealous that, wow, they get this really cool house, you know, a big wraparound front porch, and it's out in the country, it's on a farm. And so there was definitely, you know, the sense of excitement in the air.
Had they seen...
It didn't last long.
had they seen or known anything about the house prior or its previous residences?
No. No, they didn't. Now, they were renting the house. They had talked to the landlord about, the property, and all he told them was that it was an old farmhouse, which we later found out was not true. He was keeping something about the history of the house from them, and they found that out by talking to neighbors.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
What exactly did they find out was the true history of the home?
Well, they'd been there a few days, and there was a cellar. There was an old root cellar, dirt floor under the house. You could only access it from the kitchen. There was like a big, you know, hole, trap door in the floor that you could get down to the cellar to. There was a window on the outside, so you could kind of look into it if you got down on your stomach and laid down, but you couldn't, there was no outside entrance. So they went down and they explored this, this cellar, and there was a big stone table in the middle of the floor, and nobody felt good down there. You know, one of the family members put their hands on the wall and said that it felt like the wall was breathing, like it was pulsating under their hand. It's not a good feeling, really bad energy. So they ended up putting, there's a point to this, I promise. They ended up putting a rug over the trap door and then setting the dining room table on top of it. But their dog somehow kept ending up down there. Like they would go out to dinner or something, they would come back and they couldn't find the family dog, and then there it would be down in the root cellar. Nobody could figure out how it got down there. They later discovered that the house had been a funeral home, and that was the embalming table in the basement. And that's kind of what they think is the reasoning behind a lot of the hauntings. I think the area is just bad, but that probably didn't help. It had been a funeral home probably for about 20 years back in the 20s and 30s. It had been a house after that, but that's how it got its start, was as a funeral home.
When you say you feel the area is just bad, what do you mean by that?
Well, the house was located in central, on the line between central and eastern Kentucky. And one of the big misconceptions about Kentucky is that we never had a permanent Native American settlement, that, you know, the Native Americans would all come here and hunt, but nobody actually lived here. It's what most of us grew up here. And now we know that that's not true. There was a very large settlement in that area. It wasn't home to just one tribe. It was a big trading post. And that was where it was. Archaeologists have found quite a few Indian burial sites around there and mounds. So there have been, within, I would say, about a five-mile radius of that house, quite a few haunted house stories.
Mm-hmm.
They crop up now and then. A lot of the, I'm friends with some ghost hunters, and they get a lot of calls to that area, and I believe it probably traces back to the Native American history.
That would make sense. I mean, we get a lot of stories where when things can't be narrowed down to the property, or they can't be narrowed down to a person, it's, well, what about the land? What was the history there? And sometimes that ends up being the answer.
I don't want to resort back to the, you know, the Indian burial ground mythology, but, you know, but in this case, when you do have so many different properties, that that's the one thing that ties it together. So, you know, I don't know. That's my best guess.
I suppose it could also just increase the odds too, you know, increase the number of things that could potentially be going on there when you have, you know, the funeral home in that itself, you know, and it's interesting with funeral homes, because it makes you wonder sometimes about, is it necessarily the dead that have essentially been processed through that funeral home that would be the ones haunting it? Or is this a repercussion, if you will, of all the energy, of all the sadness, of all the emotions that have taken place in that building from the living that now other dead are feeding?
Exactly. I wonder about that too. I also wonder sometimes if a place is called to be something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it the chicken or the egg? Was the funeral home there and then it started gathering this negative energy? Or was there already something there that made the people who built the funeral home feel like it was a good place for it?
Yeah.
Sometimes things get drawn to a place. You know, and there's no rational explanation for it. So I don't know what was there first.
I agree. I want to go back to the events that took place in the house. Yeah. Obviously, the dog getting into the root cellar or to the embalming room, you know, with no real rational explanation. That's one thing that'll make you scratch your head. But obviously, these folks only stayed there for 2 weeks. Can you give us an idea or share some of the stories that then transpired that made that stay that short.
Yeah, and the events escalated very quickly. You know, I believe in the beginning, because the dog ended up in the root cellar, they did come home a few times and found that, they were religious in their decorations, if that made sense. They weren't necessarily church-going people, but they had a lot of pictures of Jesus and crucifixes and Bibles around the house, which is a pretty common thing for that part of the state. Mm-hmm. You know, you may not, go to church every week. You may not even be really religious, but you use Christianity in your home decor.
Sure.
It's a kind of an interesting thing there. But anyway, they had a lot of that kind of stuff in their home. And there were several occasions where they would return home and find that those items of decor had been damaged. The crucifixes off the wall, the pages in the Bibles torn out and scattered around the living room like confetti, which was disturbing on a number of levels, because I don't believe they jumped to the paranormal explanation right away. I think they thought they had vandals, somebody breaking into their home while they were gone, which was scary in its own way.
Sure.
And to me, maybe even a little scarier. But that's how things started. You know, while they were gone, things would happen. They would come back, and then this paranoia set in of who's coming into our house, or is one of the kids doing it and lying about it. From there, it became much more, paranormal in nature. My friend, with her for in the two or three nights that she stayed there at the beginning, and I honestly can't remember how long it was, she and two of her sisters were sharing a bedroom. They woke up in the middle of the night to see, a figure standing by their window. They all three saw it. It scared them, but they were kids. So, it was passed off as you all were dreaming or you were seeing something. But then they had a floor fan, which plugged into the wall. The house didn't have central heat and air. The fan at the beginning of the night started at the foot of the bed. As they woke up throughout the night, it moved around the room, and not in a vibration kind of way, but it was actually plugged into different outlets around the room. They had the bedroom door shut and locked. So, it was either one of them or it was something else. And again, this kind of led to a paranoia, are we playing tricks on each other?
Mm-hmm.
That gave way to when my friend left. She was in her bedroom. She heard her little brother was taking a bath. She was meant to keep an eye on him, but she was cleaning the bedroom. The door slammed to. Things started flying off the walls. She couldn't get out. The door was stuck. So she was sitting there in this kind of tornado, of events, things flying around her, the noise, that kind of activity, which terrified her. It stopped. She was able to get out of the bedroom, went downstairs. They told her, oh, you're imagining things. It wasn't anything. It's an old house. Maybe we were walking too hard. They made her take a bath, and she actually saw a figure. It came into the bathroom where she was and stood there and watched her and turned around and left. And I guess some kind of nervous breakdown that an 11-year-old can have. Mm-hmm. She put her foot down at that time and said, I'm not sleeping in the house again. I'm not staying. From there, the other family members began seeing things too. I think the father started having a physical reaction to the house. His back began hurting almost immediately upon moving in, which they chalked up to, a hard move.
Mm-hmm.
He was late 20s, he was a young man, but his back got worse and worse and worse. Other members of the family began, vomiting, coming down with high fevers, which again, all could be explained rationally until the 2-year-old, who barely spoke, woke up one morning reciting a list of names that nobody in the family knew, talking about cursing, using words that none of the family members used, and then talking about the different ways these people had died, how natural deaths, they were murdered or they killed somebody and were hung. And she was saying things like, I drank their blood. I'm going to drink their blood. And then quoting weird stuff from the Bible that had nothing to do with it. And this is a child who, up until that moment, barely spoke more than, I'm hungry or I want to eat. I mean, she wasn't a linguistically advanced little girl.
And those aren't.
That was the straw. That's when I got outside help.
Yeah, and those aren't things that necessarily were topics on Sesame Street at that point in time.
Right.
Yet.
Right. And, yeah. And they didn't have it. They didn't have a TV.
Okay.
I mean, this was
sure.
Yeah.
So all these things happening. I mean, obviously, your child. You go in there and they start speaking of things of that nature.
Right.
You know, I can't imagine, you know, what would be going through my mind as a parent doing what I do now. I would go, okay, there's something paranormal going on. But if that's not, you know, your first thought, you know, you have to be wondering, well, who's been around our child? And if there's no one,
who's been, yeah,
that's the only
who's been
answer.
Around her.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And I think it went on for maybe 2 days. They didn't let it go on for very long, but they did take her to their preacher, mm-hmm. who came into the house first and said that there's something not right with this house. There's something not good. He blessed the house. That didn't go over very well. And then they ended up, when things didn't improve, they took her to the church where they prayed over her there in the sanctuary. So they did get outside help in that fashion. They were believed. Mm-hmm. You know, this wasn't a case of, you know, they think, oh, this is a crazy family who wants attention, yeah. or maybe have been, you know, having a little bit too much fun with the alcohol or something.
Sure.
The preacher definitely, once he saw for himself what was going on, believed it.
So you said that you said that the preacher came in and gave a blessing to of the house. It didn't go over very right. well. Can you extrapolate on that a little bit more?
Right. So when he came in, you know, lights started flashing off and on. You know, the cross in the living room fell off the wall. They could hear what's been described to me as very loud sighs, like. You know, that kind of noise. It just wasn't, and the energy inside the house was so negative. It was such a dark house anyway. There were windows, but they just didn't face in the right direction or something. So it always felt dark. It always felt sad. You know, to walk in there and spend any significant amount of time didn't leave you with a good feeling. It was a very oppressive feeling, and that just got worse and worse as long as the preacher was in the house. And several of the family members broke down in tears and had to go outside. Just a very depressing, you know, mm-hmm. unhappy place to be.
Sure.
And his presence amplified that.
So after the blessing, I take it, obviously, things probably didn't get better.
No, they didn't get better. And her, Kathy's, and I've changed their names.
Sure.
Too. I have to stop and remember what name I used for.
Sure.
It's the only book I've written where I've changed the name. So it's, I have to think about that. When Kathy had her experience, you know, waking up and, you know, talking about people she didn't know, that was the final straw. That was really the end. That's when they started, you know, well, let's just, they never fully unpacked. I mean, the house was never completely unpacked, but that's when it became a, let's pack up, we'll find something else. And that was the point too, where the father got in his truck with one of the daughters and drove down the road and just started knocking on random people's houses saying, look, I rented this house. We moved in. We've had some things happened there. Can you tell me anything about it? And he went to 3 different neighbors. They all said the same thing. We can't believe anybody actually is living there. You know, everyone who's lived there has had problems. Nobody has stayed for more than a year until he finally got to someone who told him about the history of the funeral home. Mm-hmm. He was really upset about that. Because he had talked to the landlord. You know, he'd talked to the landlord, you know, about a week into the living situation, told him a little bit about what was going on, asked him if anybody else had trouble with the house. You know, the owner said, no, nobody else. Everybody else loved it, which wasn't true. Nobody stayed there for very long. And now I know after talking to the other family who lived there, you know, that's true, that there were things going on in the house that most people who have lived there have experienced. The current homeowner has not.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Has it ever been narrowed down at all? Obviously, they were only there for 2 weeks, so sometimes it gets difficult to narrow things down to who or how many or why. But in your research for this book, has it ever been narrowed down from anything as far as a more definitive idea on who it is that is haunting or why they're haunting there?
No definitive idea. I mean, you know, I've done background research into the house. Nobody has actually passed away in it. It may have been used as a midway point between life and death, but, you know, nobody's died in the house. It doesn't seem to have a history of tragedy in any in any way, shape, or form. It is my my opinion as somebody who researches a lot of these types of experiences, that it was more than one thing going on. I believe that the negative energy around the place was the place.
Yeah.
I think that that was different from, like, the people that they were seeing in the house. You know, I think there were several different kinds of hauntings going on within the home. And this family in particular just got a taste of all of it.
Yeah. And then it's very difficult to decipher what's good and what's bad when you have so much going on at once. And all of those things should just not be happening to begin with. That's right. When we initially talked about the building being the funeral home and just the sadness and the sad energy that must have been going on within those walls for so much time, I tend to believe that sometimes the sadness will attract, you know, sadness or negative.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's what is going on or was going on in that home. Do you still keep in contact with them? I mean, did you discuss writing the book with them before writing the book?
Before I wrote it. Yeah, actually, okay. the daughter is my best friend, has been for 30 years. So, I wanted to write it forever. You know, I've written books about my own paranormal experiences, but when people ask me what's the scariest thing that's ever happened to you, I always say it was Laura's house.
Yeah.
And it didn't even happen to me. So I wanted to write it for a long time. And I finally, you know, approached her and I said, "Hey, can I write about that house that you all lived in?" And they were totally up for it. Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about it. And they thought it was fun. Now, you know, hindsight, 20 something years later.
Haunting by association. Does the little one who experienced those things, who was saying those things in the night about the death and all that, does she have any recollection of any of that anymore?
No, she doesn't have personal memories of it. Her memory is a little skewed because she has grown up with the people in her life telling stories about it. Hold on just a second. Excuse me.
Sure.
She's grown up, you know, with people recounting the events. Mm-hmm. So she feels like she remembers it, but she doesn't.
Sure.
She's, you know, and she's like, honestly, I don't remember living there at all, but I feel like I do. Mm-hmm. The older girls definitely remember living there. The 11, 10, and 8-year-old have, you know, as vivid memories as they did when they were that age.
Sure. So when they just picked up and left after 2 weeks, was it literally get everything in the back of the truck and go?
Yep.
Or how did that transpire?
They just threw it in the truck. The stuff that they hadn't unpacked were already in boxes. The rest of the stuff, I don't believe they even packed it. I mean, they were talking about literally carrying armloads of stuff down and just throwing it into the truck and going. They didn't hang around.
Did they leave anything?
They got out.
Did they leave anything behind just to get out?
Yeah, they left. They did leave things behind, yeah.
Wow. Go ahead.
There's another thing that happened, and I can't, you know, at the time we didn't associate it with the house, but now that I have seen and experienced things myself to this degree, I have to wonder if it wasn't tied into it. Not long after they moved in. I keep saying that, but they were only there for 2 weeks. A couple of days after they'd moved in, they had cousins come and visit. It was a man and woman and a little girl. I think she was 4 or 5. And they were the ones who went down to the root cellar with the parents and felt, you know, something down there. And it was the husband who put his hand on the wall and felt, you know, so he felt that pulsating sensation. And they really didn't have a good vibe about the house and felt that there was something off with it, to the point they didn't want to stay inside. They ended up sitting out on the porch for the rest of their visit. 2 days after they left, their little girl was killed in kind of a freak accident in their front yard. At the time, you know, that wasn't associated with the house at all because it didn't take place there. But it did seem, in hindsight, that bad things were happening to the people, you know, in the house and who had visited. The dad, you know, with this horrible, horrible back pain that he was bent over at the waist, unable to get off the couch when we went back a week later and took her home. And that cleared up immediately upon moving. I mean, within days of being out of the house, he was fine. Wow. You know, the people coming down with the fevers, vomiting. So, you know, I wonder a little bit about that energy kind of feeding into them and maybe the other family taking something home.
Sure.
Again, could just be an awful coincidence, but I don't know.
When they left, was that the end? Did everything stop? Were they followed by anything?
No, they weren't followed by anything. It ended. I haven't had anything happen since.
Wow. It's one of those cases where it is truly relegated to the house, and that had to be somewhat of a relief, because I'm wondering if, you know, they were concerned of that when they left.
Yeah, they were, and they've talked about that, and when they moved, they had the new place blessed before they moved into it, so the preacher went out and prayed over it as well, and they weren't taking any chances. You know, and again, this wasn't a family who you know, was constantly recounting their adventures with the supernatural, you know, and every place they moved into was haunted. This was a family that a normal, you know, blue collar kind of conservative family who had never had anything like this happen before. The family flew under the radar a little bit. Everybody liked them. Everybody, you know, they were good, loyal, honest people. And they moved into this house, and things just started right off the bat. They moved out, and it stopped. So it does definitely seem that it was, you know, just the place in this situation.
Wow. Quite a story. And what's interesting to me is there's so many correlations with this to other stories that that you know, other haunted house stories, if you will, where it's a negative type energy there, and it's not you know grandma or Aunt Lucy, it's like the demonic homes, if you will, for lack of a better term,
right?
They seem to do the same things, if you will. You know, they
it does, yeah.
I've watched
a lot of movies, you know, since then, and I've read a lot of true haunting accounts, mm-hmm. There's a common thread in them.
There is.
Which, you know, it can't be denied. I mean, if it happens continuously, you have to look at that thread and figure out, there's something to it.
Mm-hmm. How did that go over when they left and their belongings were still there? I imagine at some point there was some conversation with the landlord saying, okay, we're gone. Why is all your stuff still here? Did that conversation ever occur?
It did, and, you know, the landlord was not very happy about them just taking up and leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, being in the country and being that this was in the early 90s, it wasn't common to sign a lease back then. So they were only out of the deposit in the first month's rent. But money was an issue. You know, I mean, this is not a wealthy family who sure. had any extra cash or savings. Mm-hmm. So finding a subsequent place to move into was difficult financially. And why most people, I think, stay where they're at.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't have the money. Your money is wrapped up in the move, in the new house. You know, you can't just leave. But they were able to find something. They tried to get their deposit back, and the landlord would not refund it. But one of the reasons he wouldn't give the money back, and this is kind of funny because it ties into the haunting for sure, is in the kitchen where that trap door to the cellar was, and I can't explain this in any way because nobody died in the house, there was a big crimson stain on the floor in the linoleum. So it was an old farmhouse linoleum, you know, peeling around the corners and stuff. It yellowed with age. You can kind of visualize that. But there's a what would be a puddle of red liquid. It had dried over the years, so it was stained. It was brown in some places. And I know I saw the mother myself on her hands and knees scrubbing to get that out. And it would come out to an extent. And then, you know, 12 hours later, it would be right back. But she couldn't do anything with that. And one of the reasons he wouldn't refund the deposit was because of that stain. But it was there when they moved in. And she couldn't get rid of it. That was just an excuse, I think.
Yeah.
Not to...
He probably almost had a regular routine of, okay, they're going to say this, I'm going to say that. Because it was more than one person that obviously left the home in a hurry.
Right. He probably switched it up. You know, he had different scripts. Like sometimes it was the puddle in the kitchen. Sometimes it was the window upstairs.
Exactly.
Just rotated them.
Exactly. Oh, Rebecca, this sounds like a very, very fascinating book. 2 weeks, A True Haunting. And you have a series of books, correct?
Yes.
And other ghostly tales, other true stories, it sounds like.
Yes, I have... four other true ghost stories. I have three collections of local ghost stories, and then I write a paranormal mystery series, which is fiction.
Okay.
And several true ghost stories out there.
All right. If you want to check out her website, it's RebeccaPHoward.net, and you can find info on her book up there, and your book also available, I believe, through Amazon as well, correct, on Kindle and paperback?
It is available on Amazon, and as of today, it is also available on Nook and iBooks and Kobo and all the rest of them.
Excellent. It sounds like a great read for our audience. Thank you so much for being on the show today and sharing your stories with us. I'd love to have you on again sometime to talk about some of your other books as well.
Yeah, it'd be fun. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
And there you have it. Rebecca Patrick Howard, thank you so much for joining us on Real Ghost Stories Online today. Of course, you can check out the link to her stuff on our website at Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like our show, you want to help keep us on the air, become an EPP extra podcast person, get all the bonus episodes of the show, all the archived episodes of the show, all the video content from the show, it's all there. Ghostpodcast.com is where you sign up to do just that. Ghostpodcast.com. We couldn't do this thing without you guys. So if you like the show, you want it to keep up, please, 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 please become an EPP. Ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.